we will move right along. Tough to follow, Sean, but I think we have somebody who can. So our next speaker was first elected as chair of the Libertarian National Committee in 2014 and re-elected in 2016. He was born in 1979 and is a unabashed second-generation libertarian. That's good parenting. He has a strong commitment to the libertarian cause, fighting on the party's behalf against unfair ballot access obstacles and exclusion of qualified candidates from public access. Has appeared on in Reason, The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Stossel, MSNBC, Slate, Salon, The Blaze, The Los Angeles Times, and many more. What some people in here don't know is that our next speaker was actually chair of the Libertarian Party of Maryland, and that's where I got to meet him, and I consider him a friend. And we had dinner last night, and we've talked about, if I may digress for just a moment, mainly about family. He has not Adam's family values. I wouldn't call it that. But no, he has great family values, lovely wife, three children, out in Arizona. Made his way all the way here just to speak with us. So that's commitment to liberty. He was a criminal defense attorney. And what his page talks about is this and that defense attorney. But I like what he says. His job was keeping poor people out of cages. That was his job. And I am going to bring Nick Sawark up here to address our audience. Thank you very much. Nick Sawark, chair of the Libertarian National Committee. Hi. Can you guys hear me? Is that a little better?
Yeah.
All right. I often disagreed with, but I don't like not being heard. I want to start by saying thank you. Thank you to Stu. Thank you to the Libertarian Party of Maryland. It is a great pleasure for me to be back in the Free State. I spent many years here. I still have a house in Tacoma Park that had a little damage from, I guess it got windy last weekend. And one of the first honors I had within the Libertarian Party was to be the state chair of the Libertarian Party of Maryland. This was back during the time when Spear Lancaster was running for governor as one of the, I believe, the first non-Republican Democratic candidate in 40 years. It was some ridiculous amount of time. It was impressive. And we were doing impressive things then. And I'll tell you that back then, I wouldn't see a room this big. So we were making progress then, but the progress that's been made since I've left, it obviously shows that I should have left quicker. I want to ask you guys a question, and I have the answer, but I want you to think about it. Who is the most important libertarian? Just think about it. Well, at the end, I'll tell you the secret. But first I want to talk about lobsters, not crabs, lobsters. So libertarians are really just lobsters. And there's a really cool video, if you go online, by Rabbi Isaac Tversky, who's a psychiatrist, amongst other things. And he talks about how, you know, a lobster is a crustacean. It's essentially got a hard shell. And as lobsters grow, their shell doesn't grow. And so they get bigger and bigger and stronger. And then they start to feel pain because the shell just sort of holds them in, and it's tight and it hurts. And what they have to do if they want to continue to grow and they want to stop the pain is they have to go to a safe place, hide away from other predators, and break that shell, that thing that protects them from everything else, and knock it off and grow a new one. And a lobster does this many times through their life before they end up on somebody's table. But the core insight of this is without pain, without the pain of growth, there is no growth. It's the pain that gets you there. It's the stress. Now, why am I talking about lobsters? This is ridiculous. The Libertarian Party is at an inflection point. Nationally, in Maryland, in Arizona, in Colorado, all around the country, we are growing at a rate that we have never grown before. We're having electoral success at a rate that we've never had before. Gary Johnson and Bill Weld got three times as many votes as any previous Libertarian ticket in the entire history of the party. That's exciting. That's incredible. But that's also scary. I look around this room and I know that there are people who have been here since the founding of the party, who have kept this fire burning, the idea that there's a political party that's committed to human freedom above all other things, when it was not popular, when we were having no success, when we were having real setbacks, and they kept that flame alive. And you look up and you see all of these people you don't know. Where did these people come from? What are they going to do with my party? Are they going to change it? Is it going to look different? Are there going to be people who don't agree with me? Are there going to be people who don't know what I went through? Yes. All of those things are true. And they're all scary. And they're all painful. But that pain is part of growth. We have to break our shell in order to grow into something bigger and better. Part of the way we do that is, as a party, we need to be more welcoming to new people. When somebody comes into the party, there are two ways that you can welcome them. You can either ask them, hey, I see you've come to this meeting. What do you not agree with me on? Like, what do you not like about libertarianism? And then you can try and give them a lecture about how they're wrong about that and tell them, like, really, you don't belong here. And you should probably leave because you're not really a libertarian. And a lot of people, when you invite them to leave, they will. And then you'll never see that person again. That's not the best way to grow a party. The better way to grow a party is to find the common ground with people who come and say, I was disgusted with my old political party. The Republicans, they left me behind. Or the Democrats, they just didn't do what they said that they would do, and I'm disappointed in that, and I want something new. You can talk to those people and say, hey, what's so important to you that you decided to look into the Libertarian Party, that you want to be part of this political party? We agree on that. Let's work together on that. And leave the arguments about what they don't agree on for some other time, or never. None of us was born a fully formed libertarian. None of us came here with perfect answers on every question. We can get there through growth over time, but if you take somebody off of the path of growth, they never grow. Help everybody else get through that pain for themselves. Help them get through understanding different issues. One of the things Stu and I were talking about at dinner the other night is what the gentleman in the back was talking about. It's not just weed. We have to end the entire racist war on drugs. All of it. 100%. Stu and many members of our party for a long time thought, we can't talk about that. That's too much. I mean, I can talk about cannabis legalization for medical purposes, but anything else is going to scare the normals. These are justice issues. Everything starts and ends with the war on drugs. Gun control, the war on drugs. Search and seizure, the war on drugs. The erosion of the Constitution, the war on drugs. The expansion of the police state, the war on drugs. Police brutality, the war on drugs. The overcriminalization of our society, the war on drugs. The massive federal spending that's completely out of control is the war on drugs. The fact that the border is all screwed up is the war on drugs. It all comes back to that. It is a pocketbook issue. It is an issue that affects our communities. We need to be strong on that issue. But that's not where Stu always was. He used to think we don't need to talk about that. And nobody beat him up about it. Nobody said, Stu, you're a bad libertarian. You got to get out of here. You don't buy into this. You got to get out of here. And now you guys apparently think he's popular enough to be on the executive board. So that's cool. You should. part of doing this is moving away from our inward focus. We talk a lot about what is going on inside the party. There was a resolution earlier tonight about what's going on inside the party. Inside the party isn't important. Outside the party is. Go to your neighbors. Go to your potential constituents and ask them, what do you care about? What's important to you? And try and find some common ground where you can talk to those issues that are important to them, because that's who really matters. If you want to represent people, you have to listen to them first. How many people came into the Libertarian Party because they care about guns? Show hands. Okay. How many came in because they care about higher taxes or having them be lower? Good. Okay. How many people came in because of the war on drugs? Okay. These are all awesome reasons to be a libertarian. But nobody outside of this room cares. They care about why they're going to join now. What thing is important to them? So when you talk to a new libertarian, you ask them, Tom, why do you want to be a libertarian? What's important to you? Do we have common ground? You don't corner them in a room and say, you know, we got to talk about guns because guns are the core of society. If you're not into guns, that's not going to really work for you. We have to be problem solvers because the Republicans and the Democrats are not. They are not solving any of the problems that we have. Not the spending problem, not the tax problem, not the drug problem, not the crime problem, not the cost of living problem. They don't solve anything. And they're at a point now where long-term supporters, and I talk to people who are major donors to the party who have come over, because the Republicans and the Democrats are both liars. They lie about what they do. They do not follow through. And that's why they want something different. That is the number one reason that people are joining the Libertarian Party now. It is dissatisfaction at their old political options and wanting something authentic and real. So we have to have real solutions, not just words, and we have to show that we have follow through. Inside our party, it is important to remember that everybody is valuable. There are people in this party that look nice in a suit and speak in terms and talk about things that are respectable and can get you invited to a Chamber of Commerce breakfast. They're very important members of the party. There are people that go out and get arrested on the steps of courthouses, or go out with protests, or go out and do direct action, or pull stunts, or wear silly costumes, or do things to draw attention to issues in a way that is not conventional. Those people are important to the party too. Everyone in this party is valuable. Everyone brings something to the table. You ever watch cop shows? Anyone like? There's this idea in a cop show. If you have a good cop show, you got good cop, bad cop, right? So they got the suspect comes in, you got good cop, and you got bad cop. They did that in the Lego movie. It was pretty cool. Till the solvent came off. So the reason you have good cop, bad cop is it doesn't work any other way. If you have good cop, that's boring because everyone's just nice. And if you have bad cop, then there's a dead suspect and, like, the episode's over before it starts. So you need good cop, bad cop. You got to have the balance. You have to have the breakers and the builders. And inside our party, we need to realize that the reason everyone's valuable is that these are complementary strategies. They don't... Somebody who is very bold and does door-in-your-face tactics and says really provocative stuff has value, as long as someone else can come in afterwards and say, you know what, I have a policy position that really addresses some of these issues in a really, you know, rational way that makes sense to people and can kind of come in and be the other person. You know, Martin Luther King doesn't get as far as he does without Malcolm X. Somebody's got to be standing outside with a bunch of rifles saying, hey, we might shoot you if this guy dies in the hospital. So that some other nice preacher can come in and say, you know, man, I'm all about the nonviolence. Those guys out there, I don't know. But, you know, maybe we can negotiate here, come up with some sort of deal that works, and then the people outside maybe won't shoot you. Would that be cool? I think that would be cool. They'll stop rioting if we come to some agreement. You need that pressure on the Overton window to push it. so that our issues become core issues, so that then the guys in suits can come in and say, hey, elect me now. I'm sensible. Not like those crazy people outside. But really, they're scary. So if you elect me, it's compromise. One of the things that you can't lose sight of as a libertarian is that politics in the United States and all around the world is essentially a contest for control over other people and other people's lives. It's a contest for control because the fundamental nature of political economy in this country is that the government controls your life. It may control different aspects depending on the administration, and different candidates may be more interested in controlling different parts of your life. They may be more interested in controlling your money versus controlling your social habits. But at the end of the day, all politics is about controlling other people, which makes libertarian politics special, because libertarian politics is anti-politics. It's the opposite of politics. If 7-Up was the un-cola, the Libertarian Party is the un-party. Our entire goal is to maximize individual freedom. It's not about whether the left or the right controls you. It's about individual control versus government control. Individual liberty and government control are opposites. If you increase government control, you take away someone's freedom. It's the only way to do it. You can't have more control without taking away some freedom. And you can't give people back some freedom without removing some government control. We're in the removing government control business, bringing down barriers. Like Sean said, it's not so much about trying to put some new thing in place to try and fix the problem. It's figuring out what's broken or what's blocking and getting it out of the way and letting people control their own lives. There's spectrums within the Libertarian Party. Now, we've already said left and right don't matter, right? Left and right doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is moving up towards more individual freedom. But there are also spectrums inside the Libertarian Party. Some of these you've probably heard of. There's this spectrum between radical libertarian and pragmatic libertarian, right? Like, are you radical or are you pragmatic? There's a spectrum between anarchist libertarian, minarchist libertarian. Do you want no government or not very much government? It's not a big spectrum, but there's some space there. These spectra is the appropriate plural. These spectra are not important. I don't care where you are on these spectra. There's one spectrum that's important inside the Libertarian Party. It's more important than any other. It's the spectrum between nice person and asshole. I don't care where you are here and here, but you got to be up here. I can teach a nice person about Hayek and Mises and taxation and economics and the drug war. It's really hard to teach an asshole to be nice. So just be nice to each other. Be nice. It helps. Other than that, remember the thing about breakers and builders. Let's all work together, no matter where you are on this side. And that goes to something. I don't remember who said it, but I think somebody else said it. But I'm saying it now, so that's good. There are a lot of people who become libertarians because they hate the state. They hate the idea of government. They hate the idea of control. They hate it with a deep and abiding passion. It, like, burns in their belly how much they hate. It's not enough to tell people what you hate. You have to show them what you love. If you really want to reach people, you can't tell them that you hate taxes. You hate gun control. You hate government schools. You hate the war on drugs. You have to tell them that you love families having more money to put food on the table for their kids. that you love people in marginalized communities being able to defend themselves when they're under attack in their neighborhood. That you love the safety that comes from having police focus on violent and property crimes instead of useless drug offenses. When you tell them what you love, that's where you get them. Because that's something they can follow. That's something that they can believe in. Hate isn't sticky. There are so many people who got on the bandwagon for the current president based on hate. And as soon as there's something they hate more than whatever they hated that got them on that bandwagon, they're off. They're somewhere else. But love will sustain you for the long haul. Love is the reason that there are people in this room who've been around since the founding of the party. They love human freedom. They love the vision of a world set free in our lifetime. They love the idea that our children and our grandchildren will grow up in a country that's more free than the one we grew up in. And they love it so much that they give their time and their energy and their money to this party. And they want to share that love with the community. We can do better at that. But we've done pretty awesome to this point, to be here, to be a live, growing political party. Did you know we're the only growing political party in the entire country? Anyone know that? That's it. No voter registration for any other political party in this country has grown over the last, 10 years. All of them are in decline, except ours. So give yourselves a hand. There are political truths that are true, and they're like iron laws of politics. One of them is that we live in a two-party system. Heard that? Has everyone heard? This is like an actual hard ground truth. I'm going to tell you about another political truth that is fundamental and absolutely 100% true and unchangeable. There is a wall between East Germany and West Germany. If you go a month or 2 months or 3 months before the tearing down of the Berlin Wall, that is an ironclad political truth that is beyond change. It's not even worth discussing the idea that you would unify both sides of Germany. It's not even in the realm of possibility. You'll literally be shot for trying to go near that wall. And then one day, a bunch of people run up, start pulling pieces off of it. Communist construction is pretty easy to tear apart. And after 3 days, there's no wall. It's gone. Everything is true until it's not. This stuff doesn't travel on some straight line arc. The two-party system is all we have until we don't. The Whigs were one of the two parties until they weren't. Didn't take, two election cycles? 2.5-ish? Stuff happens fast, so we have to be ready for it. One of the ways to be ready for it, one of the things, if you study history of political parties and how you take advantage of these inflection points, you find the orphan issues where the people are over here and both of the two old political parties are over there, right? People are over here, old parties over here. People, old parties. Get over here. Get over here with the people. Go out and talk to them about what you love. Show them how we have solutions for the things that are important to them over here while those guys stay over there. That's how political change happens. The orphan issues right now, spending cuts. There is not a Republican or a Democrat elected who will cut spending. They're not real. They're like unicorns. They're wonderful to talk about. Like drawing pictures of them is cool on your Trapper Keeper or whatever. We're not going to see one out there. There are no unicorns. There's no Republicans or Democrats that are going to cut spending. Free trade. I mean, after this last week, I think that goes without saying. There's only one political party that's going to stand up and say every time that you create a tariff, which Ty Rizdahl said something really cool on Twitter the other day, that one of his most important spelling lessons was, when you're spelling tariffs, remember, tariffs ends with FFS. FFS is also an abbreviation for a couple different words. We're the only ones who are going to stand up and say, look, a tariff is a tax on poor people. We're saying that your car costs more. We're saying that your appliances cost more. We're saying that you're going to lose jobs and not have enough money to put food on your table so that some very privileged companies and workers can get paid out of your pocket. No one else is going to say that, but we can, and we're the only ones to do it. So we'll stand alone over here with the people. Immigration. We're the only pro-immigration party there is. Republicans and Democrats don't want people coming to this country. Different reasons, but it doesn't matter. This is a country of immigrants. This is a country that was built by immigrants. My great-grandfather, Franciszek Zsarvár, came over here in 1913 with $6 or $7. No education to speak of. And, you know, my grandfather built at one time the largest car dealership in the state of Arizona with a sixth grade education and one lung. My father followed in his footsteps and kept it going. And, you know, I'm the disappointment. I ended up being a politician and a lawyer and, you know, not all immigrant stories are good, but most of them are. But really, it's all about the economy, too. If we don't have a dynamic economy in which new people are coming in, as our population ages and entitlement spending gets out of control, we're literally going to go bankrupt. I mean, I love Japanese culture. Derek and I in the back used to do kendo all the time, but you don't want to be Japan. Japan's in a bad place economically. And the reason they are is they don't let anybody come in, and everybody's getting older, and there's not enough people putting money into the system to get money back out of the system. That's going to collapse. Let's not go there. And ending the war on drugs. We're the only political party that's willing to stand up and say the racist war on drugs needs to stop yesterday. All of it. 100%. So go out there and use those issues as ways to get your foot in the door and get people to agree with you. And don't talk about the stuff that they're not interested in. When you go out, you need to be kind to each other. You need to be looking to bring in the next generation of leaders. You need to make sure that you're not forcing people out or being cruel, or trying to hold on to control too much. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks used to say, there's a quote from him, from the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, I think. Good leaders create followers. Great leaders create other leaders. If we really want to get to that next level, we need to start stepping outside of our comfort zone and saying, I don't just want you to follow me on my path. I want to build you up and train you to be the next leader. I want you to exceed where I'm at. I want to look back and go, you know what? They're doing a lot better job than I ever could. That's what we have to be doing. We have to do even better. When you go out there, you want to attack positions and not people. Personal mudslinging politics is a thing that's often done. It's effective sometimes, but only in the short term. Long term, you want to go out there and say, you know, you want to talk about my opponent's position. You want to always be honest, and you always want to be kind. If you do that, you have to deal with a lot of stuff. A lot of people, not all of my fan mail is nice. But if you don't respond to it in kind, it's about you. It's not about them. When you go out on the campaign trail, your opponents are going to say mean, nasty things about you, or their supporters are. Always have a smile. Always realize that what you're standing for is something you love. You don't need to get down there at that level. I was reading a book by Guy Kawasaki, who used to be the chief evangelist for Apple. And one of his lessons for evangelism, the idea that it's not just about getting customers, it's about getting people who are true believers. Look for the agnostics and ignore the atheists. If there are people who come up to you at a county fair and say, you know what, I'm just not behind open immigration. I don't like it. I just can't, I don't like you libertarians and your pro-drug stuff. Drugs have to be illegal. Move on. Find somebody else to talk to. You are not going to fix that person. That's not your job. Your job is to go win hearts and minds. And you win hearts and minds from somebody who says, you know, something's out of control with this drug thing, and I'm not sure if I want my kid to use drugs, but, you know, I see some of this police brutality, and it's just, I'm really confused. That's the person to spend your time on. The person who's not sure where they're at. Them you spend time on. Look for the agnostics. Ignore the atheists. I'm going to tell you who the most important libertarian is. Did anyone guess? You. Hey, look, you're all on top of this stuff. Do you remember the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup ads? So there's no wrong way to eat a Reese's? Those cute ads. There's no wrong way to be a libertarian. As long as you're kind, there's no wrong way to be a libertarian. Every one of you is brought here by something different. Every one of you wants something different for your life, for your children, for your community, for your family, for your friends. Every one of you has an important issue, and every one of you has an issue that really you could care less about. We don't have to all be the same. I have a confession. I don't like everyone in my family. There are people in my family that I don't try to spend a lot of time with. There are people in my family I'm not friends on Facebook with. There are people in my family that I won't let babysit my kids. I don't like everyone in the Libertarian Party. That's also a confession. Try and be fair with everyone, but I don't like everybody. But when it comes around to Thanksgiving time, we all sit down around the table. We come together as a family. We put aside all the arguments because there's something bigger than whether or not we like each other. When somebody needs help, there's something bigger than whether or not we like each other. I don't like everyone in my family, but I love everyone in my family. I don't like every libertarian, but I love all of you. In closing, if we are to take it to the next level, we have to remember that this party is too small still for us to fight with each other, that we need to remember that the enemy is outside of this room, and each and every one of you needs to go out and love each other, hold each other up, help each other out, and together, we will see a world set free in our lifetime. Thank you very much. I have, by my clock, 15 minutes for questions. The bar is, I believe, still open for anyone who needs a drink. I'll take Tony and then Bob. Tony?
I just wanted to elaborate on something that you just said a little while ago about going outside of our comfort zones. Back, I think it was 1998, that's when I started to do petitioning for the party. And most of the old school will remember, I was known as the petition guru. And would go out, I remember that petition drive, I think we collected, I myself collected 1,600 signatures.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm an introvert, but I also had to learn to go outside of my comfort zone and go talk to people and say, hey, will you sign my petition? But I realized that was just one step in the game, that that was just one little step. We need to do more and more things.
That's awesome. Thank you, Tony. Bob.
What would you recommend for those who are not libertarians or maybe budding libertarians outside of this room in the party as a unique selling proposition or a USP, you know, one or two sentences to define us?
We are the only political party that stands for the idea that you should be able to pursue happiness any way you choose as long as you don't hurt other people and you don't take their stuff. So here's the thing. I'm not sure that I know how to run my life. I couldn't say for sure. I'm doing my best. Muddling along. But I can say for damn sure, to a certainty, that I don't know how to run Bob Johnston's life. I don't know how to run Derek Pomery's life. I don't know how to run Tom Ashwell's life. Good eyes. It's contact lenses. What we are doing is we're trying to break down the barriers to letting other people live their lives. We're not trying to sell them a program of this is how everything should be run and everything's going to be perfect once we do it. That's the unique selling proposition. We're not trying to control them. It's a tough sell because there are a lot of people that want to be told what to do or how to do it, or they have strong opinions about how other people's lives should be run. But that's the biggest one, is that we're just not in it to try. We're all about reducing government control and maximizing individual liberty. Every issue, every time. That's the best I got. Sir?
So, I don't mean to be argumentative, but when you say...
Well, be argumentative, then.
Well, when you say that we should go for diagnostics, not meat.
Yeah.
When I first decided that I would join the Libertarian Party, I had been a communist, and I had been one who believed in violence to achieve aim.
Okay.
When my libertarian friend sat down with me and started having conversations with me about my views, my atheism turned to libertarian. So I would argue maybe something a little bit different than what you did. Because it worked for me, and if it can work for me, I think it can work for other people. We just need to look at our presentation on how we present to different individuals.
I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad that it worked for you. The advice that I'm giving is like sales advice. There are salespeople who can go out and find the hard prospect who says, you know, I'm not buying your thing. I don't want your thing, your stupid product. Stop bothering me. Stop calling me. Stop bothering me. Stop calling me. I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm a Ford guy. I'm not a Chevy guy. I'm a Ford guy. I'm not a Chevy guy. And you can work on that dude. You can work on him for months. And you can probably bring somebody like that around. You give him enough data and facts and tell him how all his friends think he's stupid for having the truck he has, and you get there. You're broke because of the amount of energy that you put into one prospect. You're literally broke. You don't make any money. Politics is sales. I know there's some people that don't like that analogy, but that's what it is. It's sales. You need to see more prospects. You need to make more calls. You need to knock on more doors. It is a numbers game, right? Right now, let's say that 2 out of every 10 people is libertarian at heart, right? 2 out of every 10 people maybe identify as a libertarian. They got libertarian ideas. That means you got to talk to 10 people, and 2 of them are going to be open to it, and you need to recruit them. And then you need to get them to start recruiting other people so that we can go out and get the 20%, because that's where we're not at yet. We're still in a room in the Crown Plaza in Annapolis, right? We're not down at the Oriole Stadium doing, you know, a massive rally. We have to go for the numbers in order to grow. Everybody should try and work on everybody all the time. I eventually made one of the hardest sells in my life. My wife changed her registration and is now a libertarian. And joined the party, too. And I'd only been national chair for like 2, maybe 3 years when it happened. We'd only been married for more than that. So I don't want to dismiss the hard sells, but I see this all the time. Going back to Tony, I've done a lot of petitioning myself, and I sometimes help other people do it. The person that wants to talk to you about the issues is not the person to talk to. If you're getting a signature and they don't immediately say, yeah, sure, I'll sign your petition, you say, sorry, have a nice day, see you later, right? They say, why do you want to sell heroin to 5-year-olds? You're like, your 5-year-old has enough money for heroin? Sorry, sir. I'm actually here getting petition signatures, so really appreciate you stopping by. Have a great day, and you move on to the next person. Because it's not about changing minds. It's about finding, there was a meme that they made for the National Party page that said, like, libertarian search and rescue. We're going to find the lost libertarians and bring them home. We're not going out there to try and change people who are convinced that, you know, they don't want to be libertarian. On an individual one-on-one basis, it's great. But as a general prospect for candidates and for activists, I think it's better to go with people who seem receptive. Yes, ma'am.
I want to go back to your comments here. And as a candidate, I just want to be...
Where are you running for?
U.S. House of Representatives.
Which district? Which one?
First district.
Where is that?
House.
Okay. All right. Thank you for running. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So one of the concerns I have on the questions is how do you open up a conversation about, which is something that's really riding the wave right now, which is school safety versus blaming an inanimate object as a scapegoat based on an emotional response to what happened in Florida. If you want to kind of open up this conversation with people that let's focus on school safety before attacking what the perpetrators utilize.
Right.
To commit the climate shift. A lot of emotional responses, it's all about that inanimate object, not necessarily how we failed at the safety of these children prior to the incident happening. How do you open up that conversation to individuals that are immediately going to attack you? Especially as a libertarian, they'll tune you out immediately once you say, well, let's talk about the school safety, tune you out. They'll turn you off. So how do you cross
that barrier to get them to kind of start to think in greater terms? Ask them what they think we should do. What do you think we should do about this problem of spree killings in our schools? What policy do you think would help? And then listen. And then ask some more questions and then listen. And depending on whether or not it's somebody that you can have multiple interactions with over time, like if they're real hostile, there's an awesome phrase that I learned from Larry Sharp. Tell me, say whatever one of your angry constituents is going to say. What should we do about school shootings?
Ban all guns.
Okay. All guns, everything, like all handguns, all rifles, everything?
Everything.
Okay. Just ban them all?
Ban them all.
Okay. Well, I really care about school safety too, and I know that this is an important issue to you. I've never heard that before, and you might be right. Thank you for sharing. And then go and talk to somebody else. No. Let that be your interaction, because what you've done in that moment, and you have to be more sincere than I sound right now. Once you learn, sincerity is key in politics, and once you can fake that, it's all downhill from there. You've listened to what they had to say. They've told you what's important to them. You haven't given them resistance. You haven't said, you're a bad person, you're stupid, you're wrong, you're not a libertarian, I don't like you, gun grabber, blah, 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 blah. And you've said you might be right. Which is true. They might be right. It might be that it's possible to ban all guns. Another good phrase to go with, you might be right. I've never thought about it like that before. Because you haven't. You probably never will. But it's validating to them that you listened to what they had to say. You did not dismiss them and say there's no possible reality in which you're right. You've acknowledged that they've given you something good. They've given you something unique. You didn't think about it like that before. And they walk away from that interaction going, you know, the libertarian candidate for Congress, she's probably nuts, but she's nice. I mean, I would sit down and have a glass of wine with her. She seems pleasant. You know, she listened to me. I like that. You know, it's like the Hippocratic oath of politics, right? First, do no harm. If every one of you in this room and every interaction that you have with every person in public from now until the end of time just leaves every interaction with them going, you know, kind of nutty, but nice person, you know, I'd hang out with them. That's a win. Anything on top of that's frosting on the cake, right? But that's the next step, is we don't get into fights with people. not getting into fights with people, you don't have to fight about anything if you don't want to. You can state your truth without getting direct on it. And if you do get into a debate, which this is a different deal, then it's, you know, questions are good, and would that policy have changed what happened down in Parkland? That's a really strong question, especially if you can ask it sincerely. Because what you'll find is that many of the proposals that are on the table don't address the issue that we want to address. They are the proposal they already had in their back pocket. It's like, hey, now's an opportune time to talk about it. People are dead. If you really want to end gun violence, like you really, really want to end gun violence, and I really want to end gun violence, you need to end the war on drugs. You need to take the hundreds of thousands of independent pharmaceutical distributors in this country who are not able to use the resources of the court system to settle their disputes without violence, and let them come into the light and let them settle their disputes the way all the rest of us do, by giving money to people like me who are lawyers. Admittedly, it's not perfect. Yeah, well, I'm a car salesman now, too. It's not perfect, but there are a lot less dead people. That's powerful. And if you want to look at real statistics, schools are safer than they've ever been before in this country. It's just the spree shootings are very tightly packed. That's why they make news. But if you want to just reduce gun violence, like deaths and injuries from firearms, ending the war on drugs is the biggest, highest power thing, right? That's what radical really means. It means striking at the root of an issue and not tinkering around the edges. You want to get down to brass tacks. You've got cops turning streets into war zones, and you've got drug dealers trying to protect their turf because they can't sue people. That's not a mix for not having a lot of dead people. Other questions? One more. Uno más. Si, Senor Sims.
So how would you relate the war on drugs to dual asset forfeiture to the softball boy?
So civil asset forfeiture is a fancy way to say literal highway robbery. It's where the cops say, hey, that's a nice car you were driving. You look like you were probably a drug dealer. The car was used to deal drugs. I'm taking your car. Maybe your car can go to court and prove that your car is not a mean drug car. Of course, you don't get a public defender because we're not going to arrest you, Mr. Sims. We're just going to steal the drug car, the mean, bad drug car. And you'll have to hire your own lawyers to defend your car. And maybe the cost of defending your car is like the value of your car. So why don't you just walk away and let me have your car or your cash or your house or your plane? It is probably the most disgusting thing in the law right now. It's been expanded into areas that it should have never been expanded into. And it did come out of the war on drugs, because the idea was there are these drug kingpins that are making millions of dollars from selling drugs to our kids in our schools. We have to not only throw them in cages, we need to take the proceeds so that crime doesn't pay. That's not really what happened, is it? It just means a different crime pays. Crime pays for the margarita machine in the police officer's lounge at the station, because it's the last criminal that gets paid, the one who took it from the first criminal. I have no problem, even as a libertarian, with asset forfeiture. If you can prove through a criminal conviction that somebody got something as the fruits of a crime, then that's a legally gotten property, and they should lose it, right? Like, that's part of the punishment system. Criminal conviction, not making your money go to court and prove that it's good money. All right, that was my final... Yes, Bob.
How would you recommend linguistically discussing repealing the welfare state?
I would not use the words repealing the welfare state. So I don't tend to, and people probably noticed this about me, I don't tend to criticize other people directly. It's not really my habit. It's a habit I'm trying to get out of. I'm not always good, but mostly. I have found it a lot more effective to talk about... Bob, do you care about other people? Do you care about poor people?
Yes.
There's something. So before you had the state involved in helping other people, you had churches and you had families and you had charities and you had mutual aid societies and you had people getting together to say, you know what, there's someone in our community who doesn't have enough, who's fallen on bad times, who had a disease, who had a mental illness, who had a drug problem, and they need help. And people would pitch in to help them. That's not about the person who needs help. It is. I mean, they need the help. There's something that that does to you, Bob. When you help somebody, that cultivates a part of your soul that awakens something inside of you that makes you a better person. And when you delegate something as beautiful as helping a fellow human being to a bureaucrat who does a 9-to-5, who may be a very kind person themselves. Most of the people I've seen who go into social work or any kind of social welfare agency in the government are very nice people. They're very kind. They're very loving themselves. But when you delegate your love for your fellow human being to a bureaucrat, not only is there an increase in overhead because it has to get filtered through the government, so probably only 60 cents of the dollar that you give to that person you want to help gets there at best. And not only do they get demeaned by having to fill out a bunch of government forms in order to get the help that they need, but you deny yourself the opportunity to grow as a human being, to be a better person, to actually be a caring person. I would like to limit or minimize how much we stunt each other's emotional and human growth. I would like to get back to people helping other human beings with real caring and kindness, rather than making this just another government job and another government program that costs too much and does too little. It's not as short as abolish the welfare state, though. Probably not. All right, my time is up. I have the hook. Thank you, guys. So I wanted to help myself by giving to the Libertarian Party. Is there a way I could do that? All right. Since I've been invited to make a pitch, I'm going to make a pitch right now. And it's not for your money. Actually, it is. Because otherwise, Stu's going to yell at me. But the first pitch is this. What is the wasted vote? Can anyone tell me what the wasted vote is? That's a good answer. But the wasted vote is when there's somebody who is so disappointed, so disgusted with Republicans and Democrats that they will never, ever, 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 ever vote for an old party again. And they go into the ballot box and they say, I'm going to vote Libertarian this time. This is the time. This is the day. This is when I'm going to vote Libertarian. And they walk into that ballot box and they get that ballot and there's no Libertarian for them. That's a wasted vote. I know that you guys nominate a lot of candidates tonight, but I seem to recall in Maryland law there's a way to nominate more candidates after this meeting. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yep.
Every one of you needs to look deep into your heart. And if there is not a Libertarian running in your state house district or your state senate district or your city council district, if there is not somebody up there to stand up and say proudly, I am a Libertarian, I want less government involvement in your life. I want more freedom for you to make your choices. I want you to not have to waste your vote anymore. Run for office. Fill out the paperwork. Put your name out there. Run as a Libertarian and give your neighbors some hope. Show them what you love. Find them and they will come in. And then next year, at this same time, at this same convention, I predict that you'll have twice as many people. Because candidates and campaigns are what bring people into this party. It's not membership cards, it's not t-shirts, it's not buttons, it's not bumper stickers. It's people getting involved with other people trying to change their community and saying, you know what, I believe in this, I want to stay involved. And we don't keep everybody, but we keep a lot of them. That's where we find the new leaders. That's where we find the new activists. those people need support. And the best way, if you don't want to go find every candidate who's running in your community, to support that is to support the Libertarian Party of Maryland, which is, what's the website?
Chelsea?
Well, LPMaryland.org.
LPMaryland.org. Does it have a convenient donate button? Is there a maximum amount of money that you can give to the Libertarian Party of Maryland? What is it?
Wait, I think it's 5,000.
It might be 6,000.
Is there a treasurer here? How much can you give?
Well, depends on what your administration is. Unlimited. When you give it to the candidates, 6,000.
No, if you want to just give it to the party.
Unlimited.
Unlimited for administrative purposes.
You have no limit on how much you can support this party. Let's start with, you know, 500, 100, 5,000, 6,000, whatever you can do. That will help this cycle go, because those people who do step up, who look into their hearts and, you know what, I'm going to go through with the paperwork, I'm going to go out there and be a voice in my community, then the state party can help them, you know, get started, can give them some seed money, can help them get some literature printed, can do things to promote all of the candidates on social media. This is a chicken and egg thing, right? People don't give money to the party because they don't know what the party is going to do with the money. The party doesn't do stuff with the money because they don't have enough money. Go do stuff with the money. More people will get money. That's my pitch.
Tom Goodman.
Thanks.
Thanks again.
You need these back, Mike?
Yeah, we need them next year.
We're saving money. We can use these next year. So we have it back. We do need to leave the room. However, there is a bar just around the corner, and everybody's invited.